Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. Why do we sometimes call very smart kids, kids who do very well in school, label them as nerds or geeks? What do we mean when we say that? Well, my guest this hour, psychologist David Anderegg, says these words embody stereotypes. They are terms of scorn, he says. They are not very healthy for kids or for our American society. So who are these kids we call nerds? Why do we use those words? And what are the consequences for them and for us? We'll find out more. David Anderegg is professor of psychology at Bennington College in Vermont. His new book is Nerds, Who They Are and Why We Need More of Them. Welcome to Open Line, David Anderegg. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're at 614-292-8513 when you'd like to comment or question. And you can email comments or questions to openline@wosu.org. So, David, I have the feeling that maybe when I was in high school, that was before the time they used those words, nerds and geek, but I might have been called one. And there are distinctions. What do they mean?
Well, we have to make sure we understand that nerds and geeks are stereotypes. They're not precise labels. Mm-hmm. And they're also, subject to sort of the folk etymology of they don't refer to any specific things. And so it's kind of difficult to say exactly what nerds and geeks are, or certainly to say how they're different, because the labels have changed over the years. Nerd is relatively new. Geek is centuries old. But how they have been used keeps changing. Some people think they're synonymous, and some people don't.
Well, we had this television show, Beauty and the Geek, that you didn't like very much. What did it mean in that context?
Oh, well, yeah, believe me, I don't like it very much. on that television show, it really portrays the worst of the nerd or geek stereotype, although they use the word geek. And what they portray are young men who are very, very accomplished, usually in science or math. They have tags when they first introduce them. They have, like, Arthur, and then underneath it will say something like Harvard graduate, or Benjamin, and it will say perfect SAT score or something like that. So what they demonstrate is young men who are very, very socially awkward. They usually have really horrible haircuts and stuff like that. And it is also made clear that they are really, really accomplished, mostly in science and math. And they have absolutely no hope of getting a date. Actually, last week, I believe it was, the last installment of Beauty and the Geek, they actually videotaped one of the geeks actually picking his nose. So they really do go out of their way to make sure that we find them completely unappealing.
You're still watching the show?
Once in a while. I can't bear it, but once in a while I feel like I need to check in just to make sure it's still its old awful self. And indeed, it always is.
So a nerd or a geek is kind of somebody who is very bright and really accomplished in a particular field, often science or math, but who's considered to be out of it. I mean, they're not very good looking. They're not very well groomed. They probably wear one of those pocket protectors for pens. No woman of any interest is ever going to be interested in them. I mean, that's the stereotype, huh?
That is the stereotype, and it is very clear that the stereotype includes those two pieces: the accomplishment, especially in science or math, and the complete hopelessness when it comes to love and romance. Now, we know that this is not true, that, scientists and mathematicians do actually get married and have children.
Yeah, right.
But the stereotype is very, very powerful. And by the way, I'll come back to the pocket protector if you want, but I do have a lot to say about pocket protectors.
Well, tell us about pocket protectors now. What's the story?
Well, pocket protectors are the things that give away the nerd or geek stereotype as a stereotype. Because, in my book, I'm a developmental psychologist, so I talk to lots and lots of kids about this stereotype. And one of the things they always say about the geeky or nerdy kids they know is that they wear pocket protectors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will ask them, I usually say, oh, come on. I haven't seen a pocket protector in, like, 15 years.
Right.
Are you telling me that these kids actually wear pocket protectors to school? And then, invariably, the kids will stop and say, come to think of it, they don't. And so, but what kids will initially tell you is that they're absolutely certain that these kids wear pocket protectors, and then if you really push them on it, they'll admit No, they really don't. Nobody in my school wears pocket protectors anymore. So it, I think it does reveal something about the power of the stereotype, that it completely overwhelms perception of reality.
That's really something. But, you know, you wonder whether the stereotype hasn't been demolished to some extent. I mean, look at the successful Bill Gates. I mean, there's a guy that some people might call nerdy. What about Steve Jobs, who comes out in the very, you know, cool black outfits at the Apple conventions with the black turtleneck and looks very sharp? And but haven't they – I guess they haven't finished off the stereotype.
Well, we have to be aware of what age group we're talking about. I know a lot of young people, especially people in college, who are sort of post – certainly post-high school, and they're sort of hip and fashion-forward, and they think nerds and geeks are really, really cool because they have outgrown the stereotype. And my point that I make in the book is that this is something which is really entrenched in middle school and in the lower grades in high school, and then it slowly starts to fade. But the problem is that it never fades away completely, and also it certainly affects a lot of decisions kids make in middle and early high school grades. That's what's really destructive about it.
Sure. My guest, David Anderegg, professor of psychology at Bennington College. His new book, Nerds, Who They Are and Why We Need More of Them. Well, by the way, if you'd like to talk with David Anderegg, maybe you were considered to be nerdy or geeky, 614-292-8513 when you were a kid, and how did that feel? Maybe you indulge in those stereotypes yourself. David, you say you clearly say that these are words of scorn, right? There's no question about that, huh?
Certainly not among middle school and early high school kids. They're definitely words of scorn, and among most parents that I talk to, nobody really wants to be called a nerd or a geek. It's usually delivered with a fair amount of contempt.
Mm-hmm. What do the kids that you talk to who are the recipient of these words, what do they say about how they feel about them?
Well, some of the kids who are on the receiving end of these stereotypes, of course, they feel terrible. I have worked with kids who have attempted suicide as a result of being labeled as nerdy or geeky. But other kids, sometimes they're even sort of compassionate that what they say about nerds or geeks is that they feel kind of sorry for them. You know, they're kind of like they're so hopeless and pitiful that they actually have some compassion. Not that they would want to be one, mm-hmm. not that they would want any of their friends to be one, not that they would hang around with one, but sometimes they actually feel sorry for nerds or geeks because they're so pitiable.
Well, is there any truth in the stereotype? I mean, do people who tend to excel in science, math, computer programming, et cetera, do they tend to be socially awkward in any sense?
Well, I don't know that we have any research which actually demonstrates this. We do have research which now goes back almost 100 years, which demonstrates that the stereotype about geniuses being weaklings and being, you know, physically unhealthy and all that sort of stuff, that's completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
We have research that because, you know, biologically, intelligence and attractiveness and good physical health all spring from the same roots. That is, you know, good genes, good prenatal health, good care in childhood makes people both intelligent and healthy and attractive. It makes it, all those
sure.
things go together. But that doesn't stop the fact that for, you know, for 100 or 2 years, everyone has still believed that if you're intelligent, you must necessarily have weak eyes and
yeah.
you must be a weakling. And if you're attractive, you must be kind of on the stupid side.
Well, if there's no basis in fact for any of this, where do these stereotypes come from?
Well, I believe certainly a lot of them come from American history. In the early history of our nation, we were trying to establish an intellectual culture separate from the intellectual culture of Europe. And so American intellectuals were supposed to be different from the musty, desiccated, book-learned people of Europe, many of whom were also who were still tainted with a certain priestly caste. You know, that these were ecclesiastical types, were the learned types in Europe. And Americans were trying to establish an intellectual culture here that was very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried to establish the idea of Americans as schooled by nature, practical, not book smart, practical smart, active intelligence, intelligence in the world, not in the library, et cetera, et cetera. And that we can see that in old stories, like, for example, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, where there's an opposition between the school teacher, who is book smart but awkward and nerdy and unattractive.
Is that Ichabod Crane?
Ichabod Crane,
yeah.
Indeed. And then there's the his antithesis, Brom Bones, who is smart and handsome and funny, and but he's not at all interested in schooling. And of course, he gets the girl by outwitting Ichabod Crane. And that we've been living with this for 200 years. So I think there's some reasons why, buried in our early history, why we have this stereotype. I don't think we need to still have it.
So, in fact, you think The Legend of Sleepy Hollow should not be taught to kids below college level?
Yeah, I don't think it should be taught to kids in elementary or middle school because it just reifies a stereotype. I've been known to say if somebody wrote a book for young adults now in which the school teacher is portrayed as a total idiot and he is defeated by somebody who is handsome and popular and book learning itself suffers as a result, because at the end of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, there's at least one of the old Dutch farmers who burns all of his books and says he's not going to send his children to school at all anymore. If we had something like that written today, parents would be clamoring to have it not taught, not in libraries, and not let their children read it. But the fact that it was written by Washington Irving makes everybody think, oh, yeah, this is a great book. I think we should teach it to college kids, not to middle school kids.
So historically, we've liked, you know, a person is very smart, but an active, extroverted kind of smart, you know.
Yes, a practical
practical
kind of
smartness.
Yes.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And the other kind of theoretical smartness where you're off with a book or in the lab, we haven't tended to favor that. By the way, are there some counter stereotypes going in the media? Because I saw an ad for a show called The Big Bang Theory in which a woman on one side of her has a traditional-looking young man who looks like, you know, almost the jock type, by the way, a stereotype in itself, perhaps, jock. And on the other side, there's this guy who's a good-looking guy, but he's wearing glasses, and she's thinking to herself in the little thought balloon, he's kind of nerdy, but he's kind of an attractive guy. So are there some – at least that show seems to be working against the stereotype. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I do think that there are a couple of cultural products which people really are trying to work against this stereotype. There's also a TV show called Numbers,
yeah,
where there's a very attractive young man who's a mathematician who uses mathematics to solve crimes. I think these are great, but I think we have a long way to go in this regard.
In fact,
because there's so many other stereotypes working in the other direction.
Okay, we're at 614-292-8513. Our first caller here, David. Hello, David.
Morning, peace to the world. I have to say, even personally, that this, what the guest is talking about has impacted me. Growing up at a very early age, even from 5 years old up, I had this notion was put into my head that, you know, I was big-headed and unattractive, and I just decided very early that maybe I may not be as attractive as the next guy, but I was always going to out-study them and be better in school. And as it turned out, I graduated from a very big high school in the East, 800 kids in the class. I was number 7 class president. I was also the captain of the basketball team and all this kind of thing, but still was never able to get over this notion because I had good grades and straight A's and all that kind of thing, that I wasn't attractive to the opposite sex. But as it turns out, later in life now, looking back on it, I can really see that was all false. But there's so many stereotypes that we get put into our head. A lot of this, even just with how we sell products, coming out of Edward Bernays, who, as you for sure are aware, was the nephew of Freud, which really started a lot of this promotion of products and all that and glamour and these kind of things, which is really a shame because if there's one thing we do need in our society is we need intellectuals to help us get the ideas, and that there's such anti-intellectualism, which you saw a lot of even with President Bush initially coming out and how he has been portrayed.
Well, I think, David, our caller makes a number of good points, huh?
Well, yeah, don't get me started on Eddie Bernays, but let me respond to your main point. I think you demonstrated, of course, that this is a false opposition, that you could be an excellent student with straight A's and be the captain of the basketball team. So you know that you don't have to choose one thing or the other. But I do certainly think that, because I talk to so many young people who do feel they have to make this choice, and unfortunately, they choose the opposite way that you did. They decide that since they want to be attractive and popular, then they sabotage their own grades. They don't do well in school. They don't take science and math classes because they don't want people to think they're nerdy. Hmm. And so that's my biggest concern, is that kids, when faced with that choice, will not make the choice you did, but will go down the other road.
So in other words, you've talked with children in your practice who go that far, who stay away from math and science courses, who don't want to be seen as in any way, quote, nerdy, and they alter their lives as a result of that.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I got interested in writing this book in the first place was because I was talking to a child who was in fourth grade, whose, you know, school performance had precipitously dropped, and when I interviewed him about that, he told me that this was because, you know, he didn't want to be seen as a nerd, and this was in fourth grade. He was already sabotaging himself, and I thought, I need to look into this a little more.
Surely.
And yes, I talked to a lot of kids who do exactly the same thing.
Caller, thank you. Let's move on to another David on the phone. Hello, David.
Hi, Fred. I teach at a small liberal arts college, and indeed, I think these stereotypes, you know, go right up through the college years. We still have our football players and our cheerleaders, and I always love to caution classes, you know, my students, that nerds win. I tell them that 20, 25 years down the road, the ones with the money, the ones with the gorgeous wives, everything, are the nerds. You know, because when you look around, the football players fade, and whatever glory you had, whatever fleeting glory you had with athletics, fades very quickly as you become an adult. You know, I think everybody has their time in the sun. You know, I'm not discounting the hurt, the pain that, you know, the out group would have in their early life, but I do think they have their day.
David Enderig, what do you think?
Well, I think that's interesting, and I do think it's true that if you study hard when you're a kid and ignore a lot of that stereotyping, you will probably end up doing better in life. My concern, of course, is that there are a lot of people who use this idea that, you know, the nerds will win later on to justify anti-nerd and geek prejudice when kids are in school. And there are a lot of adults who basically say, oh, it's all right to make fun of nerds and geeks now. They're going to end up ruling the world. So, of course, they will end up on top. So it's not going to hurt them to be ridiculed now. Now, there are several reasons why this is illogical, not to mention the biggest reason, which is if they are going to end up on top, you might not want to alienate them now. You might want to have friends at the top somewhere down the road. But there are lots and lots of people, kids and parents, who basically justify really vicious stereotyping because it's all going to even out in the end and the nerds and geeks are going to win, so we can persecute them now, which I think is, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous and it's unfair, and I think it's not anything that we would apply to any other stereotyping. We wouldn't apply that logic.
Let me ask our caller, David. You know, when I was in school, I remember teachers on some occasions mocking kids who would now be called nerdy, kids who were different and joining in on the stereotype and joining in on the mocking. Now, as a teacher yourself, do you think any of your fellow teachers do that?
I don't think on the college level. I think we like to celebrate the nerds, so to speak. I think because most college faculty members generally were the nerds at one point. Frankly, I wasn't. I was a late bloomer. I was in the jock world, and when I look back at the people that I went to high school with, you know, I'm 30 years out now, the nerds are the brain surgeons, the nerds are the scientists, the nerds are the, you know, the generals in the military, even, curiously enough. You know, I don't know what happened to the, a lot of the jocks just kind of fell off the face of the earth, or they're working in lesser roles.
Well, we hope that stereotype is also untrue, because there are probably some of those kids who were jockey who turned out later on to be late blooming in terms of their intellectual achievements. At least I hope so. I hope it's not so rigidly predictive as all that.
No, I agree with you. I do agree with you.
Thanks, caller. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
David Andereg is my guest, professor of psychology at Bennington College. Nerds, his new book, Who They Are and Why We Need More of Them. Here's an email from our listener. By the way, you can call 614-292-8513 or email us at wosu.org. An email from Carol here who calls herself an aging but proud girl nerd. She says, I didn't get called a nerd in high school, but I find myself out of step with my adult peers to this day. I'm age 49 now. And she says, please speak about the stereotyping of Star Trek fans.
Oh, well, you know, Star Trek is just one fantasy world. There's a chapter in my book about nerds and fantasy, about why it is that this is a piece of the stereotype that people who are engrossed in science fiction or fantasy get the nerd label. I do think that this is a complicated story, and some of it has to do with what I call entry costs. You know, if you really like to enter into any fantasy world, which is greatly detailed, then you will get the nerd label. You know, it used to be when I was growing up, and for many, many years afterward, people who read the Lord of the Rings trilogy, that was a very nerdy thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Watching Star Trek, that was a very nerdy thing to do. There were all sorts of fantasy worlds which are seen as somehow the domain of people who are a little off-center. I do think some of that has to do with the fact that anything that requires a lot of effort and energy and also a lot of enthusiasm is sometimes off-putting, especially in terms of this stereotype. Let me give you an example. This is not exactly on the Star Trek issue, but an example is, you know, one of the things I looked at for the book is I looked at all sorts of nerd and geek self-tests on the internet about all these things where you can test yourself to see if you're a nerd or a geek. And at least one of them, in fact, several of them, include questions about things like, after you go to a movie, do you wish to talk about it with the people you watch the movie with? And if you answer yes to that question, your geek score goes way up.
Good grief.
Yeah, exactly. That any kind of enthusiasm, any kind of really entering into even a movie where you want to talk about it afterwards is seen as just unbearably geeky, because I guess what you're supposed to do is, you know, go to the movie and then not talk about it. I guess that's what cool people do. I'm not sure.
You know, this is real anti-intellectualism, isn't this?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And anybody who is enthusiastic about anything which requires a little mental effort. And Star Trek, you know, does require a little mental effort, not a lot, but it does require a little. And if you really get into it and really think about the history of the characters and the concepts that get stirred up by science fiction, that is seen as something which is just a little, you know, it's really not cool enough to be cool.
All right, callers, hang on the line. We're going to get right to you after we take this short break. David Andereg, my guest, professor of psychology at Bennington College. Nerds, Who They Are and Why We Need More of Them is his new book. I'll be back after these messages at WOSU 820 NPR News.
I'm Scott Simon of Weekend Edition from NPR News. Here's some of the interviews that got away from us. The Kennewick Man, Julius Caesar, Sir, do you foresee a compromise with the Roman Senate? Gertrude Stein, and Rudolph Valentino. Ah, he didn't say much anyway. But we do talk to an awful lot of people every week. Stay tuned, or stay by the phone. Never know, you could be next. Saturdays on NPR News.
Saturday mornings from 8 to 11 on WOSU 820, NPR News. After February 17, 2009, all full-power television stations will broadcast only in digital. If you're one of the thousands of people in Central Ohio who uses rabbit ears or a rooftop antenna with your analog TV, you're going to need to take action to continue watching TV. Learn more about what you'll need to do to make the switch, as well as ways you can help others, at wosu.org/DTV or call 292-9678. Corporate partners help provide support for WOSU 820. Your business can join them and reach an educated, engaged, appreciative audience every day. Your business will also be associated with a trusted source for national and local news, arts, and culture. For more information, contact Christine Schottich at 247-4469. And thanks for supporting WOSU 820, NPR News.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820, NPR News. Why do we sometimes call very smart kids who do very well in school, why are they called nerds or geeks? Psychologist David Anderegg says these are stereotypes. They are terms of scorn. He says they're not very healthy for kids or for our American society. We're finding out why. My guest, David Anderegg, professor of psychology at Bennington College. His new book, Nerds, Who They Are and Why We Need More of Them. We're at 614-292-8513. You can email comments or questions to openline at wosu.org. Let's get right to our callers. And hello, Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Just two observations. One is I was very much taken by the call from the liberal arts professor who, while acknowledging that, quote, the nerds will succeed, was actually stereotyping the jocks in just the way that in high school the nerds get stereotyped. And I found that if I was a student athlete at a liberal arts college, I would expect my professor to be a little more open-minded about the fact that I might be able to actually do well in class and play football.
Well, David, there's another stereotype, the stereotype that says jock, right?
Yeah, I talk about this in my book. You know, I think that there is something archetypal about this. I'm not a Jungian, but it certainly has an archetypal feel that one of the ways you know somebody is a nerd is they're not a jock. And one of the ways that you know someone is a jock is they're not a nerd. In other words, it's some kind of primitive opposition that you really have to be one or the other, but you certainly cannot be both. And I think that's ludicrous. And I think it's certainly ludicrous for student athletes. We all know there are all sorts of athletic scholarships where you have to be an excellent student and an athlete. And we know that there are things like, you know, Bill Bradley and all sorts of, you know, athletes who are really, really intellectually accomplished. So I don't really think the stereotype is useful to anybody, and I do think it's unfair to jocks. In school, jocks get a better deal, but that doesn't mean that it's fair to them
either. Dan, what do you think?
I think that's exactly right. I know a lot of smart football players and I know a lot of smart basketball players, and I also know a lot of smart kids who didn't play sports. Interestingly,
sure.
my young daughter is a member of a group of four or five very smart, very bright, very attractive young girls, and they refer to themselves as the nerds.
Oh, what about that, David?
I don't understand. I didn't hear the end of that question.
His daughter's a member of a group of young girls, very bright, very smart. They refer to themselves as the nerds.
Well, you know, the whole issue about girl nerds is very, very interesting. The problem with the stereotype, I mean, nerd is a stereotype, and the nerd stereotype is male.
Really?
Right?
Okay.
If you ask people to describe the prototypical nerd, 99 out of 100 people will describe a male. So the idea about, you know, girls describing themselves as nerds and being nerdy is very, very interesting. I think it's much less toxic. In a way, it's less toxic for girls because the stereotype is really an overwhelming stereotype about an unattractive boy. And so some girls can get away with calling themselves nerds. But on the other hand, I also think that, you know, attractive girls have had to learn, for centuries, certainly for the last century or two in America, attractive girls have had to learn that they're supposed to act dumb in order to be seen as attractive. This is something that girls have known forever. One of the points I make in the book is that now this standard, which is if you want to be attractive, you have to be dumb, it used to be only applied to girls. Now it's applied to girls and boys.
Hmm.
But I do think that it's the whole issue of girls having fun calling themselves nerds is, first of all, it's wonderful. And if it's really fun, I think it's great.
David, you do write in your book, though, about a young girl who came to see you in therapy who was very upset because other students were mocking her because she was wearing now glasses. And, in fact, you urged her mom to think about getting her contacts? Was that in the nerd context?
Well, what's really interesting to me in talking to people about this is that you would think that by now people wouldn't necessarily equate wearing glasses with intelligence and also with nerdiness. But as I said often in the book, I had several kids who found it very difficult to talk to me about nerds and nerdiness because I wear glasses. And so they thought they were really insulting me. And I would say, like, really? You really believe that? You really believe that people who wear glasses are both smarter and more nerdy than people who don't? And they say, yeah, they really do believe that. And in fact, there is some recent research, which I think is hilarious, which demonstrates that you can give college students, you can give them clear plastic glasses with nothing in them except clear plastic, and give them a test, and kids who are wearing clear plastic glasses, as opposed to kids who are not wearing clear plastic glasses, the ones wearing the glasses will do better on the test, because when they put the glasses on, they think they're smarter, and then they feel more confident, and then they do better on the test. It's totally beyond my comprehension that people still have this stereotype, but they do.
All right.
So just to finish up with that, one of the things I do argue with parents is that, you know, if kids are being mocked for wearing glasses, I don't think there's any problem with getting your kid contact lenses. It's really not that difficult. And if it really is a problem for your child, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that.
Mm-hmm. Our next caller here is Pat. Hello, Pat.
Hey, good morning, Fred, and guest. I missed the beginning, so I'm not sure if you've talked about this, but it seems as though one of the concerns is the stereotyping, the regard that people have, or young people have, for their less pop culture peers, I guess. But it seems to me like parents have an opportunity, if not a responsibility, to expose their children to a lot of different kinds of things when they're young. I mean, not just sports, not just, you know, video games. I mean, to me, that's part of the fun of raising a child, is to take your kid to the museum and take them to a musical concert.
Sure.
Let them take dance. Let them take sports. Camp, you know, outdoors. I have friends whose kids have been to Disney World any number of times, but they've yet to see the Grand Canyon. I mean, and as a consequence, I think my children have grown up to be wonderfully tolerant individuals because they've had a chance to be in a lot of different places.
Sure. Well, David, the parental role is a big one here, huh?
Well, I certainly think the parental role is a big one, and I think that that exposing your child to all sorts of experiences is, of course, the best thing you can do for your kid. I do think that there are lots and lots of parents who perpetuate nerd and geek stereotypes because they are so terrified that their children will be labeled as nerds or geeks that they want to prevent that at all costs. And so I do think that parents do sometimes limit their children's activities and also perpetuate these stereotypes because in the back of their mind, they're really worried that these labels are going to be applied to their own children. I frequently hear parents deriding other kids as nerdy or geeky in front of their own children.
Mm-hmm. And maybe some parents just buy into the stereotype. Maybe that's what they think.
I think they do, but I also think certainly if your child is not a particularly good student, and we live in a very competitive society, it's easy to make yourself feel better by deriding another child who is a good student by saying, oh, well, you know, of course he does well in school because he's so nerdy and geeky, that's all he has going for him, et cetera. And as I point out, if you say that in front of your kids, you're instructing them in the following, you know, you're instructing them as follows. If you do well in school, I will have contempt for you. So, which I don't think is a really good instruction to give to your children. But in general, I do think it is a parent's role to not only to expose children to all sorts of different things, but also to allow children to follow their own interests, whatever they are. And if they happen to be, you know, chess or, you know, what is, things that might be labeled as nerdy, so be it. That's who your kids are.
I like Pat's idea of exposing children to all different kinds of experiences.
Absolutely.
And then they can become more tolerant because they will have participated, right?
Absolutely.
Pat, thanks so much for your call.
Okay.
And our next caller here is Mary. Hi, Mary.
I have been waiting quite a while, and I think your guest has already spoken to what I want to give as a personal experience. I'm in high school before the word nerd is invented, but my algebra teacher was the coach. The boys worshipped him. We girls adored him. He asked me to stay in class, hold back a day, and he wanted to speak to me. And what he wanted to tell me was that if I continued to make hundreds on the weekly test, I was likely not to get a boyfriend. And then he added, I don't think probably this is something your father would have told you. He knew that I was being raised. My mother had died much earlier. And I was being raised by my father, and this is the advice that he gave me.
How did you react to that?
I was so upset I could barely stay in school the rest of the day because it was extremely important to my father that I make good grades because that was going to be, there was no loans then. That was the only way I was going to get to college was a scholarship. And I worked on that all week until the next weekly test. And by that time, I had devised a way. It was algebra, and I would do as best, good as I could all through the program. And if I found a really hard problem, that's when I would switch and I would put the Y quantity up in the X and the X quantity down in the Y. And then when that was graded, that one would be wrong. But I would know that it was because I had switched the two values there. And but it affected me for years afterwards. I learned not to bowl well when I was with a date.
Oh, my.
It was this whole thing to reinforce the male standard and male approval as the top. It followed me. That's probably one of the reasons I've been an ardent feminist.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, here's a good example of the terrible destructive power of stereotypes. And here's a teacher using it, huh?
Well, I'm, of course, it's an appalling story, and I think that it is something, as I said, that you know girls have had to deal with this for many, many, many years. My biggest concern is that, of course, feminism has had its given us its victories and its defeats, so to speak. And one of the things that's most concerning to me is that the contemporary version of feminism for a lot of younger kids is that girls can be just as demanding when it comes to hotness as boys have always been. And so girls can demand of their boyfriends that they be hot and therefore bad at school, just like boys have always demanded that girls be hot by being bad at school. So it's equal. It's nice and equal, but unfortunately, I think we've retained the worst quality of the stereotype rather than the best. Mm. And it's a big concern to me in my work with children.
Surely. Mary, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you for taking it.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from a listener who writes, I'm enjoying the discussion, but it's very male-centered so far. I was derided as a schoolie in grade school, for instance. And the listener also, David, wants you to address what she says is the scorn that Hillary Clinton earns for being, quote, the girl who always had her homework done.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, there's when we talk about nerd and geek stereotyping in politics, it's such a rich area. We could talk about it for another hour. You know, this goes back to, at least in the recent past, when Al Gore was running against George Bush, and Al Gore had written his, you know, he was an expert on environmental issues, and he had all sorts of information at his fingertips, and he was constantly derided as being nerdy and geeky and pointy-headed and like the, you know, kid who had all the right answers in school, and the press participated in this completely.
Yes.
By talking about how unappealing Gore was because he seemed to be somebody who always did his homework. And that is apparently, it's now something which is going to emerge in every presidential election. There will be the unappealing, nerdy, geeky candidate. I guess it's now being applied to Hillary Clinton, although I have also seen Barack Obama described as a nerd because, you know, he went to Harvard.
You've seen that word in the press?
Absolutely, yeah. I've seen there's a columnist for the Los Angeles Times who described Barack Obama as Steve Urkel with a better tailor, which, you know, it was supposed to be funny, but I don't think that kind of stuff is funny. I really don't. I think it what it does is it consistently lets people know that people who do their homework and who seem to be smart are really objects of suspicion, but not people we want to lead the country.
It's interesting. Bill Clinton seems to, when he was president and running for president, have avoided that stereotype. In other words, if you talk to Bill Clinton, and we can see on television about policy, I mean, he can go on and on and on. I mean, he was well-versed and well-studied, and yet at the same time, somehow he didn't earn this stereotype.
Well, I think my own theory about this is that I think the term wonk was invented specifically for Bill Clinton, because everybody wanted to be able to describe somebody who knew everything there was to know about policy but was still attractive. And you couldn't call him a nerd or a geek because he was too attractive and obviously interested in ladies. He was too, nerd or geek just wouldn't make any sense. So that's why we needed the term wonk.
So what this really is about an awful lot is about an awful lot of intolerance for anybody, I mean, who's different. And that goes with the jock stereotype, too, you know. I mean, intolerance for somebody who dares combine qualities that we find not usual.
Yeah, and that because it challenges us to think outside of our boxes. To be fair to George Bush, I think that, you know, I talk in the book about the incident when he announced, a couple of years ago, he announced his summer reading list, which included a bunch of French existentialism, including the Albert Camus book, The Stranger. And everybody in the country said, oh, ha, 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 he's sure, like he's really reading, you know, Albert Camus. And, you know, maybe he was. Maybe he really was. Maybe he was, that was his summer reading. It does strike me as a possibility, at least. But nobody could believe it because we all know that jocks don't do that.
Well, let's go back to our next caller here. And hello, Matt. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I was one of those stereotypical jocks growing up. In grade school, my teachers wanted to hold me back because I wasn't, you know, academically, you know, up to par with other students. And then in high school, actually graduated last in my class. But then I went to college, and I was a captain of our football team in college at a Division I school, and I was a academic All-American. And so one of the things that carried me through grade school and high school, and I was in our 10-year reunion this past summer, and kid after kid after kid that I ran into, and they would look at me and say, oh my God, you graduated from college, you know, what do you do now? And, you know, I have a really good job. And one thing that, you know, the kids who were considered the geeks and the dorks would always tell me, and one of the things that I'm most proud of now is they always said, look, in high school, you always considered the cool kid, and you always included us, you know, in whatever parties or whatever functions or whatever, you know, we always felt that we were kind of outside the box, and we really appreciate that.
Very nice.
So I was wondering, you know, sometimes those I think that tend to be successful in life are the ones that can strike a balance between emotional intelligence and, you know, and intellectual ability. And I think that I had a lot of emotional intelligence growing up, you know, with my mother constantly telling me, you know, you always have to treat people fairly, you know, no one's better than anyone else. And then I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity in college to, you know, move further academically. I mean, one surgeon told me, I work with surgeons now, and he told me that I fell through life backwards and landed on my feet. So I don't know if it's luck or not, but I wondered if you guys could speak a little bit to the balance of emotional intelligence and intellectual ability.
Absolutely. David?
Well, I certainly think that it's a good balance to have, and I don't think either jocks or nerds have a monopoly on emotional intelligence. I mean, you obviously have both, which is wonderful. I do think that sometimes these stereotypes are so powerful that kids, when they're enacting them, they don't even know what they're doing. I worked with a young man who was, you know, very, very popular, athletic, very popular kid in middle school, and he did not have the good messages you did about including people. He was very likely to exclude all sorts of kids, and he apparently tormented all sorts of kids who were nerdy or geeky. And then when he was a senior in high school, I had a chance to see him again, and I was talking with him about his previous life, and he said, you know, I really can't remember why I picked on those kids. There's nothing wrong with those kids. Do you remember why I picked on them? Because I don't remember. And I was laughing about it, and I said, it's like this, you know, it's almost like the stereotype comes over everybody like a cloud, and they have to act out something that they don't understand and don't even want to act out. And then when the cloud passes, it's a, well, you know, why did I do that? You know, I mean, that's kind of what it's like working with kids a lot of the time. But I am really trying to, you know, raise this issue, raise the profile of this issue so that it's not just acted out as if it's a fact of life, because it's not. It's a fact of American culture.
Hey, Matt, well, thanks for calling. Thanks for including all those kids in your social life.
Thanks,
that's
Matt.
Just great.
Thank
no
you.
No problem. Sure, if I ever have a party, you guys are invited.
All right. Okay. Nobody else invites us. hello, Ron, you're on the line.
Hello. I wanted to talk about something else before, but now I just thought of a question. Would Dennis Kucinich be considered a nerd?
You know, I don't really think I know enough about Dennis Kucinich to answer that question. I mean, oh, he ran for president, but I'm from another part of the country, and I don't know very much about his biography or about his life. What do you think?
I think since I like Dennis a lot, I think maybe because I was sort of in the nerd group when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I also... the thought of Helen Caldicott came to mind. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but
sure, yeah, the founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility,
yeah.
The anti-nuclear group.
Sometimes when she's talking about George Bush versus Bill Clinton, she'll say something to the effect that the people in Washington nowadays think in their reptilian part of their brains, when actually we need smarter people to, like, help save the planet, or I forget how she puts it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly think that, you know, complexity is something which is really, really difficult to communicate. And I think that having a grasp of complex issues is obviously essential, and having a grasp for how complicated complex issues are is really, really important in today's world. Now, you know, you can be a very smart person and have a grasp of all those complicated issues and still be able to communicate them more simply to people who don't understand all that complication. You know what I mean?
But yeah, like the previous caller who was a doctor or whoever that was.
Well,
yeah.
Kind of like he helped out the nerdy type people, even though he was a jock.
Yeah.
But I do think the... I do think it's very, very important for people not to denigrate complication or a grasp of complication, because these are the people who are going to be leading us. I mean, as you may have noticed if you've been reading the newspaper right now, that a lot of this, you know, concern about the financial crisis, especially the Wall Street piece of our financial crisis, over and over again, people have been saying that nobody really understands these complicated financial instruments that are being bought and sold and traded, that nobody really understands how they work. I think this is kind of scary, and I think we should have people who are running our financial system who know how they work. I actually think that should probably be an important criterion for running our financial system, is knowing how it works. You know, expertise is going to be more and more something we have to rely on in the future. And practical intelligence and charm is just, it's not going to be enough.
Dan, I should say, Ron, thanks for your call. A few more minutes here with David Anderegg, professor of psychology at Bennington College, his new book, Nerds, Who They Are and Why We Need More of Them. Pam is on the line. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted the guests to kind of assess some observations that I made and if they may be accurate or not. I have three children, and I noticed that the geeky label kind of starts taking root in the fifth grade, and it definitely takes hold in middle school, which has a huge impact on how children who are labeled geeky view themselves. But then from there, I noticed I have a 15-year-old, and I was very active in his course selection for high school. But I noticed that had I not been active, and some of his peers who had equal capabilities as him were not picking courses that they truly qualified for, such as honors courses. And a lot of them, you know, kind of just said, oh, I don't want to work that hard. And you know, their parents either didn't know or just, you know, accepted that that's where their child was at. I kind of want the guests to speak to how much of an impact these kids...
Sure, I understand.
These kids who chose not to take the more difficult courses were qualified to, but they wanted to portray a certain image.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it happened to be more of the athletic type of kids.
Sure. And we're running out of time here, so Pam, hang on the line. And David, we talked a little bit about this before, that kids actually will make choices to conform.
Yeah, they will. And it is worst in middle school. But, of course, the problem with making these choices in middle school, as your caller points out, is that the choices stay with you. If you choose not to push yourself in math, especially in middle school, it's very hard to go to college not having taken pre-calculus or calculus in high school and then go to college and say, oh, I want to be an engineer, or I want to be a scientist. It's very difficult to do that a lot of the choices that determine your later choices are actually made in middle school at a time when, you really shouldn't be making these choices in some ways. What we know about countries who are very, very high achieving in math and science, they require harder math and science classes of every student. You don't get to choose in middle school and even in high school. There are places in Europe where you take, two or three years of physics is required of each kid to graduate from high school. It's just a requirement because they don't trust the kids to make those choices. And I think there is a lot of wisdom in that.
So, David, thank you, Pam, for your call. We just have a couple of minutes, David. But what is, I guess, some of what we need to do here has to change and challenge these stereotypes has been implicit in our discussion. But do you have any other specific points to make about how we work against this?
Well, I certainly think that what I'd like to see is that nerd and geek labeling is something that we don't do in front of children at all. I'm not big on censorship, but I think it should be sort of like, if you tell an off-color joke to an adult, it's one thing, but you don't do it to a child. And I would like us to get to the point where we don't use nerd and geek stereotypes in front of children at all. And I also think we need to really pay attention to what our children watch on television and monitor their, the messages that they get from the culture, because I don't think anybody should be watching TV shows like Beauty and the Geek because it reifies these stereotypes in very destructive ways. And I think it's time for all of us to consider our own geekiness and to embrace it, our own nerdiness, and to learn to love our own inner nerd, which I think most people have in some sense. They have an inner nerdiness, which I think it's great, and it should just come right out in the open.
In the final minute, David, have you embraced your inner nerdiness, and how have you done that?
Well, I always laugh with people. People frequently ask me, am I a nerd? And my answer is always the same. I'm a big fan of Baroque Counterpoint and the Boston Red Sox. So you figure out if I'm a nerd. You can figure out from those are two of my passions, okay? So that's who I am, and that's who I'll be probably for a long time.
So you've embraced your Baroque Counterpoint.
I certainly have, yes.
Okay. David Anderegg is professor of psychology at Bennington College. His new book is Nerds, Who They Are and Why We Need More of Them. David, thanks for being with us this hour.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
On listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, we're streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.